Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, which is a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television Radio, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific here at the Broadcast Center. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. It is March 17th, 2022, and I'm very excited to welcome Mike Mogul to our show. He's a certified consulting meteorologist, national weather educator, and the founder of How the Weather Works, where he specializes in providing forensic weather services to attorneys and insurance companies. How the Weather Works services include reconstruction and interpretation of past weather events, as well as expert witness testimony and consultation for criminal investigations, automobile accidents, and personal injury and property damage cases. Mike has practiced meteorology for more than 50 years, having worked for both the National Weather Service as well as the satellite service of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And he grew up on the 14th story of a 14-story building, that makes sense, in New York City, where when he was 9 years old, two hurricanes hit New York City, and Mike's nose was firmly planted on his apartment window watching the storm unfold. Now, to present himself as a credible consulting meteorologist, you know, he must demonstrate scientific knowledge, ethics, and communicate information in a way an attorney, a court, and a jury can understand it. He says prides himself in being able to take complex weather and related information and translate these into easy-to-understand interpretations, presentations, as well as visualizations at all legal levels. Wants to be credible, and he is. Wants to be honest, and he is, and forthright, to find the truth. If the truth helps the client, then it's perfect. And if his research says they don't have a case, he can actually tell them that as well, and they respect that. Fascinating work. Many of you listening might not have even known there is such a company that actually reconstructs and interprets past weather events for such things as this. I think it's absolutely fascinating. As a weather person myself, loving weather, I did some substitute weather for a TV station in Connecticut through AccuWeather. I've always loved the weather. It's fascinating. But to break it down in the way that Mike does, this is really, really a fascinating way to do it. Let's welcome him to the show so we can dive right in. He happens to be in a beautiful location where the weather is quite nice, Naples, Florida. So when he picked all the great weather locations to reside, he picked a good one where the sun is usually always shining. Welcome to Close Up Radio, Mike. A pleasure to have you here.
Pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to really discuss this because I don't know if, you know, everybody knows that there is such a thing like the work that you do. I think it's really fascinating. What initially for you, was it when you were looking out the window there on the 14th floor in New York City and you saw the action with the hurricanes? Did that sort of spark your initial keen interest in weather and meteorology in the first place and the science of meteorology? Tell us about the early inspirations that pointed you in the direction of this work, Mike.
Well, it's really easy. It's those two hurricanes in New York City back in the 1950s. I think one of them was Carol and one was Diane. I don't remember the names for sure, but yeah. I know that they did a lot of damage in New York City, and back then we had TV antennas on the top of the buildings, and yeah. I watched the TV antennas blow horizontally, just like the cows did in the movie Twister, and yeah. So I was just fascinated by it, and then I'd watch the clouds come down the Hudson River when we had a cold front go through, and we had northerly winds blowing down the river, and we got like lake effect or river effect cloudiness, and then I was hooked forever. Fascinating business. Even when The general public says, boy, the weather is same-o every single day. It's not the same-o to the meteorologists. And I'm just fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by the technology and what it can detect. I'm fascinated by how the skill of the forecasters has improved over my lifetime. And I've gone back and looked at some historical stuff, like Luke Howard from England, who named the clouds. I'm out there taking cloud photographs on an ongoing basis. I took some the other day. They were absolutely spectacular clouds. And I'm going to do Sky Awareness Week in a couple of weeks. So if anybody wants to do that, they can check that out at my website too. But I'm fascinated by weather, but I never, Jim, never thought I would be a consulting meteorologist. I, too, had no clue that certified consulting meteorologists even existed. And it was my boss in the National Weather Service in the 1970s that suggested that I should get a CCM. No, I'm sorry, it was the early 1990s, said that I should get a certified consulting meteorologist certification from the American Meteorological Society, because when I left the Weather Service, I would want it. And I had no clue, but I followed his advice, and here we are.
That's fantastic. Wow, what a great reason to do what you do so well and why you love it. Why is it the best? Why is weather, as you say, the most awesome career in the world? Is it the fact that it affects every single one of us, it's larger than we are, and it's ever-changing and unpredictable and really impacts our lives in so many incredible ways that we live our lives, you know, busy and always doing what we have to do, and sometimes we even forget about the importance of the weather around us. Is any of that part of why you feel it's the most awesome career in the world?
Well, all of that and more, but weather does affect us 24/7, whether it's the clothes we wear, whether it's the vacation we take, whether or not they can work on building a house, aviation, the planes have to do different things under different weather conditions. And, of course, the storms, when they come, can bring, you know, scattered damage, or they can bring widespread damage, and every one of those impacts people. And, of course, if there's a drought or forest fire, it's affecting ecosystems, it's affecting agriculture, it's affecting everything. But it's not always bad. I mean, right now it's a beautiful day here in Naples, Florida, and as you said before, it's not a bad day in New York City for mid-March. But it's just that it's different, it's ever-changing, it's challenging, and now I'm doing a career that is really impacting people on a very individual level as opposed to putting out a general forecast or a weather warning. Now I'm dealing with a particular individual, a particular insurance company, a particular legal firm in solving, quote, a dispute.
Again, it's really absolutely fascinating, sort of reconstructing the scene. And meteorology is fascinating anyway, but sometimes, I guess for some, it may seem it can be so chaotic and random. I mean, and a lot of people that I talk to, I mean, one day it's 61 degrees, and then the next day it's, you know, 22 and it's heavy snow. But when you start to look at the data, you can see what actually happened, and you even use that information to sort of predict cycles. Cycles are really what it's all about, right? Some people say, "Oh, well, the weather's worse now than ever," but you know what we're experiencing now probably happened many times over in the existence of the Earth through cycles.
I call this short-term memory, Jim. We remember what happened last week. We remember what happened last month, and we forget what happened when we were growing up. And I know that when I grew up in the 1940s in New York City, we had a big snowstorm, and it really impacted New York. I was 2 years old. I don't remember that. But I do remember the snowstorms in the 1960s. I remember the heat waves in Washington, D.C. But the general public isn't focused on those types of historical things, they know the here and now. And so typically, going back to news media that you talked about, the news media reports, this is the worst storm in 40 years. And it's almost always the worst storm in 40 years.
Yeah. Storm.
I don't know what's magic about 40, but it's 40 years. I'm telling you, listen to the reports. It's the worst storm in 40 years. It's the worst storm this decade. And that's not a good measure of the worst storm.
It just makes it dramatic and makes it more, sellable and exciting for some reason when I know it's definitely an interesting thing.
But again, in your comment a minute ago about predictability, it is those patterns. It is how temperatures juxtaposition themselves on weather maps, how wind patterns change. And based on that, individuals and now computer models that individuals can use to predict the weather, we have really got incredible forecasting skills. I mean, you had a storm come up the East Coast the other day that was forecast 5 to 6 days in advance.
Yes.
That would have been unheard of when I was growing up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The technology and the understanding of it all, appreciation of all, is really extraordinary. Even the being able to sort of predict a tornado, considering especially the folks in the Midwest and the South, where it happens more prevalently, or it's more prevalent. But still, the knowledge and being able to warn people is greater now than the ability was years ago, and that's such a great advancement. You've seen all of that transition. You've seen that growth. You've been doing this, some 50 years. You've seen the evolution of the field and the evolution of the science. Tell us about some of that, what you've witnessed, and the evolution of it all.
Well, when I grew up, the TV weather guy in New York City drew on an blackboard, or what's equivalent now to a whiteboard. There are people that drew on clear glass back in the early days. The TV weather people, meteorologists were forecasting seat of their pants in the early days with very rudimentary models, to predict the future with large forecast errors. But when I went through my career, I started out as administration in Washington, running various programs. Moved to Kansas City, where I worked at the Storm Prediction Center, and came back to Washington, did more work monitoring programs and writing manuals, boring stuff. Then I forecast at the National Meteorological Center, which is now the National Centers for Environmental Prediction, and then went to San Francisco to literally work in the trenches at the forecast office, and learned that there was no weather data to speak of west of San Francisco, and that's where all the storms and everything were coming from. And so that opened my eyes to the evolving satellite technology that was out there that could observe the weather, and you see that now on all the TV weather reports. They show the satellite animations. And I actually then went to work in the satellite arm after a 3-year stint in Texas, where I worked at the forecast office in Fort Worth. And as a satellite service, I was training people on how to use the satellite data to forecast weather and understand the atmosphere. And so that was my career in the weather service. And being able to be in the field, to be able to be in the national centers, and to be able to deal with administration, I got to see the whole gamut. And I also did some research in there, too, for one of the research labs. But I saw the whole spectrum of how meteorology worked in the National Weather Service. And by the way, the Weather Service is an incredible organization. In terms of what it does for this country, it does not enforce laws or anything like that. Even when it gives out safety information, it's all, here's what you should do, not what you must do. And they are literally a service agency. Some agencies call themselves service. Well, the Weather Service really is service. And working for them has been wonderful, and I learned an incredible amount and gave back an incredible amount. But all that work guided me in what I can do now that I've left the government, because all of those tools and all of those skills, right down to forecasting severe storms and dissecting weather data down to parts of counties, not quite to street level, but pretty close, to use it when I do my forensic meteorology work. And you have to do that in forensic meteorology because the incident occurred at 123 Main Street. The nearest National Weather Service and FAA observing site is 27 miles away.
Mm.
Well, the weather at those sites is not the weather that happened at 123 Main Street. And
yeah,
so
right.
One has to figure out what happened and why it happened to be able to explain it.
It's really fascinating. It just is, and ever changing, and no 2 days are really exactly alike. Most people think of forecasting when they think about meteorology, but you're more focused on what you referred to earlier as sort of the post-mortems, right? Tell us about that.
Well, when you watch crime shows on TV, there's a post-mortem. Somebody has been murdered or killed or had an accident, and they have to figure out what happened. And in meteorology, it's been coined post-mortem. We don't prefer that there be any deaths, obviously, and all that the Weather Service and people like myself try to do is keep people safe. But some events have fatalities. Some events have major property damage. And we go back and we reconstruct with the tools that we have, just like the forensics team does after a crime scene or an accident or, criminal activity, to go back, look for clues, and figure out what really happened to the best of their abilities. And that's what we do. And I learned the other day, actually, that there are only 244 practicing certified consulting meteorologists, certified by the American Meteorological Society, at work today. The others have either retired or are not practicing, doing what I'm doing. They may have their seals, but they are not, quote, actively practicing. So there's really a handful of us that are doing this work, and yet there's a very high demand in the insurance and legal professions to, quote, help them out.
Mm. It's amazing to realize that as well. The expert witness work that you do, that's another fascinating area. How were you introduced to expert witness work, Mike?
Well, I don't make fun of me on this, but shortly after the O.J. Simpson incident in the mid-1990s, I received a call from a public defender in the District of Columbia. I was living in the Maryland suburbs, and she needed an expert witness to testify in a Fourth Amendment case.
Mm.
And my first question to her is, an expert meteorologist for Fourth Amendment, isn't that search and seizure? And she said, yes, my client was busted for dealing drugs in D.C., and the police arrested him. And in the arrest form, there's a place in the upper part of the form to indicate weather conditions. And they had marked the form clear. And she said, I remember that night I had to drive home, and it was pea soup fog. And there's no way the officers could have seen what they said they saw. So I went and investigated the weather data. I checked the location out. It was right next to a creek in northwest Washington, D.C., there was snow cover on the ground. Warm air had moved into the area. There was dense fog because of the warm air moving over cold ground and cold water and snow. And there was no way the police could have seen what happened. So we went to trial once. We went to trial twice. And the judge kept saying, where are the police? And they never showed up. And the third time they never showed up, the case was dismissed and the individual was set free. And that's what got me started on this. And so I have to say that it was the O.J. Simpson scenario that got me involved, because the lawyer specifically said, I need an expert witness that can explain things to the jury, and I can't afford an O.J. Simpson type of expert witness, parentheses, that puts everyone to sleep.
Hmm. That's quite amazing, too. Yeah, that's... What a story. I mean, what a you know, chain of events for you in your life. God, that's amazing.
I do believe in serendipity. That is how I met my second wife, and so serendipity worked there. It worked in this O.J. Simpson linkage, and I've been doing forensic work now for 27 years.
That's incredible. You know, you work both for plaintiffs and defendants. You're not just like a hired gun. How does it work?
Well, I operate on the premise that whoever calls me first gets first dibs. So if a homeowner through their insurance company or through their most likely their lawyer says, hey, the insurance company is not paying, then the plaintiff gets me. And I get calls from people representing insurance companies that say, we're not sure there's a claim here. The person has made this claim. Our preliminary analysis says there's nothing to have caused the damage. And so I'll investigate the case from the insurance company. But more often than not, I'm probably two-thirds of my cases are plaintiff-based. And I will say that typically, usually, the plaintiff is on the right side of what happened. But there have been several cases where the insurance company was right. There was not a valid claim for what happened. And so I just dig into the data and I tell the truth, as you noted in the introduction. And if the lawyer isn't happy with what I found, then they don't have to spend a lot of money running a case that's going to be costly to everybody concerned. And that's pretty important. It's just as important as making sure that you have solid data to support your case.
Absolutely, yeah. It, you know, obviously nobody who walks into the courtroom has an understanding of meteorology in the way that you do. So tell us about how you sort of construct the story for the jury in a way that it, you know, it, they can understand and relate to it, maybe in layman's terms or what have you.
Well, you know, you mentioned that you did some TV work. I did some TV work, too, and so you have to really be good at explaining things. And I'm also an able Toastmaster, thanks to another one of my many mentors in my life. And so I'm able to speak well, and I'm pretty good in audiovisual materials, so I'm able to help attorneys come up with useful exhibits to use in the courtroom, and I will use all of those. But I think the most exciting thing that happened to me, at least once, is the judge and the attorney that I was working for at the time allowed me to do an actual demonstration in the classroom to explain how a tornado and a downburst actually works. A downburst is a strong outrush of winds from a thunderstorm. A tornado is a rotation in the thunderstorm, so they are intrinsically different. But I actually did a demonstration in the courtroom. And the other side came back that day and said, well, we want to bring a meteorologist in to rebut Mr. Mogul, but we didn't do it during the discovery period, so we would like permission to do that. And the judge agreed, provided that I could rebut this new expert witness that came in. And so we got to do demonstrations in the courtroom a second time. The judge came off of her bench and came down by the jury and watched the experiments. And she was enthralled, and I figured that if the judge was that involved, I had the jury engaged, then I did exactly what Bull wants to do on the CBS show, get the jury in your side, and we won the case.
That's amazing. Wow. That is incredible, you know, when you really think about it. And to break it out like that is extraordinary. Most cases, I guess, they settle. So what's happened, you know, that you're in court in the first place? How's it gotten this far? Is there an opposing expert witness who doesn't agree with the conclusions? Is that how it sort of plays out?
Well, let me put it this way. We have a volatile stock market right now. I am sure that there are many brokers that are in recommending that their people buy stock X. And there are probably a bunch of brokers out there that are saying, don't you dare buy stock X. And so you have the same scenario in meteorology. You have the same scenario in medicine. And all doctors don't always agree. And so what happens is that sometimes, you know, you look at the same data, but you can come up with different conclusions. And so if some side doesn't say, okay, you win, then it's going to go to trial. But you are right. Most of the cases do settle, and very often it's the opinion of the meteorologist or possibly the meteorologist along with the engineers that have to deal, you know, with structural damage in these cases, to collectively come up with a scenario that says this is what happens. So I'll give you an example of a case I'm working on now. I'm not going to tell you where it is located, but the insurance company told the plaintiff and his insurance, his lawyer, that there's no storms in the area. Go away. We're not going to replace the damage. And he was determined, because he knew what the weather was, to pursue the matter. And so I got to dig into the data and discovered that there were a series of tornadoes that moved across the area on the night in question. And the radar data, the high-resolution Doppler radar data, showed not one, but two separate tornadoes passing over the location 45 minutes apart. And so he now has a what I'll call a dynamite case to go back to the insurance company with and say, not so fast. Look what I have. And, you know, his lawyer was ready to give up the ghost. He was ready to give up the ghost. And he said, no, I know what happened that night. I'm going to pursue it. And that's happened, Jim, in a lot of cases where the lawyer is ready to give up because the initial weather data doesn't support anything. And yet when you dig down to the local scale, you see that things did happen. And if they didn't happen right there, they happened in the surrounding area, and you can easily extrapolate and interpolate that if it happened all around the incident site, then why couldn't it happen at the incident site? And so the idea of getting a meteorologist as well as an engineer on board if there's structural damage involved early on is usually a lot better than waiting till the end. And I think my biggest concern of what I'm seeing of late is there are an awful lot of attorneys that, you know, decide on the weather data they get whether they have a case or not. And there's a number of engineers that think they're meteorologists. And they come up with a weather report in their in their engineering report that many times does not resemble what really happened because they don't know what to do. And so my approach these days is engineers shouldn't pretend to be meteorologists, and meteorologists should not pretend to be engineers.
And it's changed greatly, too, because a lot of the meteorologists of earlier years were more personalities who read the weather, and now being a trained certified meteorologist is, you know, par for the course, and it makes a tremendous difference.
And there's a separate certification, Jim. There's a separate certification for broadcast meteorology.
That's right.
And many of the TV meteorologists have now earned that, and it's very similar to the CCM seal.
That's right.
They have to justify ethics. They have to justify their ability to understand and explain weather. So the two seals are sort of in tandem.
I want to get to the website, weatherworks.com, at www.weatherworks.com, to connect with Mike and learn more. But real quick, we've got about 60 seconds. I'd love if you could slip in just a little bit about the cloud stamps and involvement with the Postal Service.
Okay, real quickly, back in 1989, I had the brainstorm of let's have cloud stamps. I started a petition, got 3,000 signatures. We didn't do this online. We did it with paper. We sent it into the Postal Service and never heard back until 10 years later. And then I got a phone call that said, we want to do cloud stamps. And so for the next 5 years, I and several other meteorologists and people involved in art worked with the Postal Service to come out with a set of cloud stamps. 2004. They're 37-cent stamps. My wife bought up most of the ones that were available, I think, that day. And we got cloud stamps issued. And again, I love clouds. And we have Sky Awareness Week again coming up the last week in April this year. And information for that will be at my website. There's information about educational activities I do and also the forensics I do. So people can get in touch with me there. There's a contact form, and I'm just excited about weather.
Absolutely. Weatherworks.com is the website. Mike Mogul of How the Weather Works is our very special guest founder. Thanks for joining us, Mike. This was fascinating. Really appreciated all your time on the show today.
Okay, you all take care and enjoy the weather.
You too. And thanks again. Really, really a pleasure and very eye-opening for sure. Good luck with all that you're doing. I know it's very important and crucial work. And again, thanks for explaining it to us and sharing it with us. We encourage folks, again, to go to weatherworks.com to learn more because Mike is a certified consulting meteorologist, national weather educator, and the founder of How the Weather Works, where he specializes in providing forensic weather services to attorneys and insurance companies. Mike, thank you again for joining us as well, and we thank the audience. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time till next time, and invite you to stay right there. We'll be back momentarily with another fascinating guest right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and thanks for joining us. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.